Welcome to Conversations from the Heart, the podcast of Moyo Talks and the Heart Center. Good morning, all. Welcome to Conversations from the Heart, the official podcast of Moyo Talks and Moyo the Heart Center. My name is Mark Bind, and I am one of your hosts this morning. And if I could invite our other hosts to introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Cindy Holmes. I'm the director of the School of Intuition and Healing. I love this time on a Monday when we open our hearts and connect to all that is.
Good morning. I'm Alex. I'm a life and business coach and a technical partner to Moyo. And I'm so looking forward to spending this morning with everybody.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Valerie. I'm excited once again, as Cindy said, to share the space with everybody. I'm an energy healer. I work as a mindfulness facilitator. And I'm reminded that as we have these conversations from the heart this morning, that I invite ourselves and all that actually get to listen to this to bring to it a mind of curiosity and awareness of however it unfolds for us this morning. So happy to be here.
I'm Jennifer Anderson, and I am in Melbourne in Australia, and I am a teacher of sociology at Deakin University in Melbourne and psychologist and transpersonal counsellor. And I'm really looking forward, as always, to our conversation this morning.
Great. Thank you, guys, for introducing yourselves. This morning, Cindy is going to take us through a meditation. Over to you, Cindy.
Thank you, Mark. I invite you all to sit with your feet flat on the ground and cross your legs and arms. And just place your arms on your hands, on your knees, or in a comfortable position. Let us just follow the breath. Breathing in. Breathing out, breathing in, and breathing out. Feeling ourselves getting heavier on our chairs. Our feet sinking down into Mother Earth. Feeling that connection with Gaia. Feeling as she holds you. And as you just drop those roots deep into the earth, or those anchors, or whatever it is that you connect to Mother Earth, connect to her essence, connect to her vibration, connect to her infinite love, connect to her strength. And now allow that beautiful connection to come up into your body. Allow that to come up into your base. And just secure yourself with the third root or anchor, or whatever it is. Just feeling that earth energy as you drop down. And again, allow that energy to come up and feel it coming up and down your spine, holding you in this incarnation, supporting you. Let us open the base and just feel Mother Earth absolutely boosting your base, boosting your immune system, dissipating your fear, holding you securely. We bring our focus to the center of our chest, our heart. And from our heart, we allow ourselves to connect to the highest point of light that we can. And we bring that light into our own physical bodies. And just feel that beautiful light as it goes into the physical body, and allow that to go to any dis-ease that you can feel or that you can't feel, but just allow with intention for that light to dissipate anything in the physical body, transmuting it into white light and healing the physical. We now allow that light into the emotional body and allow any emotions that are not serving us to transmute in this light, in this unconditional love, allowing the emotions to heal. We take that light into our mental body, allowing our limited beliefs, unserving thoughts to dissipate in the light, transmuting it into beautiful positive energy. And just think of the positive affirmation you need for today to affirm in your mental body. If you cannot think of one, the one I always use is, every day, in every way, I get better and better. As we move into the spiritual body and we just allow that light to support our connection to all that is, to our soul, to source, we allow the light to enhance that, giving us healing, support, and an abundance of love. We feel our heart center connected to all our subtle bodies, taking us beyond, but connecting us through the center of our heart. As we open our minds and our hearts to the conversation today, we place ourselves in a bubble of protection as we check our grounding. And when we're ready, we bring our focus back onto the screen.
Lovely. Thank you, Cindy. What a beautiful meditation. Everybody's looking nicely centered and ready for the conversation. Who received the inspiration? The topic for us to discuss today.
I was sitting with possibility and potential.
Yeah, and how does that, how did it come through and how do we take that further?
I'm not sure. I went really deep actually in that meditation very quickly. That was incredible. Thank you. I guess just, I've been thinking, looking around me too this week, you know, with spring and abundance and just everything, you know, sort of bursting forward, I guess. And I was thinking about just this, you know, that every seed has it knows and it, you know, it waits and it's dormant. And there's a design, but it's, you know, it's not sort of pushing, trying, but there is just that potential there. And so I've sort of just been sitting with that and just I've had personal reflections a lot this week as well. And just that potential, I guess, and, you know, in the right environment with the right nurture, with the right care, et cetera, you know, that things can either, you know, go one way or the other, but also of human resolve to, you know, maybe be stunted when, you know, talking about the seed, I suppose, and I know I'm going all over the place, but just as a metaphor, you know, that's got that really hard shell sometimes, and then it cracks forth and, you know, will just sort of grow and become something, and that we don't necessarily by design ourselves know that, but that, you know, if we sit in our potential and our possibility, you know, anything is really possible, I guess, you know, and that we can, I don't know. I think I've lost my thread a bit, but that was just what I was sitting with when in that meditation. It was really reverberating potential, possibility, just sort of, yeah, trying to put words to it, but I'm not sure that, you know, I've done justice to that really.
So, thanks for that. Because as you've been speaking, Mark, there's something in the Course of Miracles that you talk about the miracle that happens with the physical. And I was listening to a recent podcast that you did. And do you want to just talk about that? Because that's what's kind of coming to me, the possibility of the miracle.
Yeah, being in a state of miracle-mindedness brings you into a place where that miracle can happen quite naturally. And because what I noticed when Jen was speaking is that all of nature, everything on the planet except for mankind or humankind unfolds quite naturally as it should, with absolutely no effort. You know, a plant, an animal, a mountain range, where everything just unfolds quite naturally. But humankind sometimes doesn't. It can, but mostly it seems that for most of humanity, it doesn't unfold quite naturally. And what is it? What is the difference between humankind and nature? What has separated? I guess it's the separation. As I phrase the question in my mind, the answer comes. What has separated us from our potentiality? And then this takes us almost back to the point that Cindy brought in, and that A Course in Miracles teaches, is that our work is to be in a state of miracle-mindedness. And being in a state of miracle-mindedness is really about being in a state of non-judgment, being in a state of forgiveness, you know, where you see the world with the eyes of forgiveness, and just being in that space. And being in that space, I think, allows this potential and the possibility to unfold naturally as it should. But I think what humanity does is we kind of get stuck. We kind of like get into like a dysfunctional loop of thinking that kind of seems to like pull us away from our potential and our possibility.
Mark, it's making me smile. And I think about giving birth, about how we used to naturally give birth. And if you think about now the performance, I mean, and I know it's an absolutely huge thing, but, you know, the baby monitors and the things that we've done around us as a species to make it so unnatural. Whereas if you look at animals giving birth in the wild, and although, you know, when the elephant dies, you know, the elephants all like really do this dance and they do, but it's not a drama. It's something that's quite natural. And although women are prepared, there just for me seems to be something quite artificial, something taking, you know, the science. I think like baby monitors is just taking away a mother's natural ability to hear her child and use her intuition, and how we've along the shoulds and the have tos and the musts, and, you know, you got to have this spray and your baby can't have that and the dummy can't do this and blah, blah, blah. I mean, dirt is one of soil is one of the most healing things for our digestion, and mothers are disinfecting, you know, and so I just think about how we've just created and taken away our natural ability to heal with the earth, with pharmaceuticals, with all of that, our natural ability. Everyone gets a cold. The first thing they go and do is take a whole lot of medication to push the cold down, where our bodies have a natural way of healing if we allow them to.
It's like the state of disconnection that we've fallen into has taken away our natural abilities to be connected to each other. I was reading recently about a guy who was researching or studying sort of tribes of the North African deserts. But, you know, 100 years or more ago, and would go walking in the desert with these guys, and these guys were just naturally telepathic. So he was going with somebody who was going to be meeting another family member or somebody from another tribe somewhere else in the desert. And they got to a point, and he was so astounded that the guy says, no, this is where we wait. And he connected telepathically to where the person he was meeting was. And he says, no, we've just got to wait here for a day. And the guy, I think he might have been American or British, was just like astounded. This guy just had natural telepathy because they lived in union, in harmony with nature. And mothers have this when they allow it with their children. They know when something is wrong. They know when they need to do something. I'll tell you an interesting story quickly. when I was a kid, I must have been, I don't know, 10 or 11 years old. We used to ride our bicycles like, you know, it was quite safe in those days. We'd just ride our bicycles around the neighborhood. And I used to like riding my bicycle quite fast. And one day I picked up the bicycle from my brother had borrowed the bicycle and he had left it at a neighbor's house. I went and I picked it up and I started off riding down the hill where I live as fast as I could. And then at the bottom of my hill, the road kind of forked and the one fork went even steeper down into almost a hairpin bend. At that point, I realized that the brakes weren't working. The brakes had been wound around the bicycle and they weren't working. And now I was facing this hairpin bend at full speed, and I almost made it. But then I went into the gutter, in the corner between the driveway and the gutter, and my front wheel stopped. I did a few somersaults, and I went headfirst into a garage door that was about 3 meters further down the hill. I don't know how long I lay there, but I must have been concussed. And then as I sort of brought myself to and I picked the bicycle up and I started walking back up the hill, there was my mother driving the car down the hill because she just had a sense that something was wrong. Now, we've all got those abilities when we are connected. And I think that when we stay connected to ourselves and to nature, there is the possibility and potential for ourselves to unfold as we should.
That's, it brings me back to something that always reminds me about the possibility that we have. And there's a teacher that I follow called, I don't know how to pronounce his name, so I'll just say surname. He's a Zen Buddhist monk, and his surname is somebody, Shinrin Suzuki. And he talks about when we arrive in each moment with a beginner's mind, like we start with curiosity and beginning, there's so much possibility. When we arrive with this expert mind, which the world has created, that we've become experts and all this knowledge and all this information in our mental bodies, and we lose that connection to nature and our own intuition, the possibilities actually become fewer. So as we arrive with the openness and a connection and a presence, the possibilities then arrive within us from our own inner wisdom and not necessarily from the expert mind that we have been conditioned to connect to. And as you spoke about being a mother and being a parent and our experiences and our knowing, It is incredible how the human body is facilitated and created to be this being where it knows, but as the woman arrives into her pregnancy, our conditioning around our thinking of how it should be removes of the wonderful allowing of how it possibly could be. And I think that's how our lives are, that as Cindy did that meditation, clearing those limiting beliefs of how it should be, allows us to move back into the possibility of how it, with the possibility of how it could be in those moments. And I think that's very powerful, that the earth shows us in its arrival as it opens up. And as in our arrival in each day, the possibilities are there for us to touch on if we move out of that mental conditioning and that expert mind that we've been conditioned to.
Valen, I think you would back me up on this, is that what's often interesting is when we do the energy management and we get people to, we don't say to them, now you're going to psychically tune into your partner's energy and you're going to find out what's going on. So we don't tell them, because if we told them, everyone would go, and we don't say you're going to use your intuition. We just allow them to sit in each other's energy. And it's amazing what they come up with and whatever. And then we say, well, well done. You know, you used your six senses and you used, and everyone goes, but I can't do that. And I think, you know, if you think of babies and how they learn to walk and how they, you know, before we've told them you should do that and don't hold on to that and be careful of this, and how we then condition people around fear. But if you looked at everything as a new baby, as a possibility, and we've just done that to our species. We've completely conditioned them into a place of fear. And I really, you know, in the meditation, really wanted us to look at, what are we fearing? Why are we, let go of that fear in our base, in the incarnation? Because if we don't fear anything, we can only learn. And from learning, we will gain more.
Yeah, absolutely, Cindy and Val. And I think trying to get back to that, you know, that sort of, it's almost like the birth potential or the birth right when they're, you know, like the thing I always think of is a baby, when a baby's born, they can speak any language. They can speak any language at all. It doesn't matter what environment they're in. They'll just start learning and speaking that language. They can learn five. They can learn more. But it's what they will hear immediately that they'll start mimicking and copying. But that potential there to just learn anything in their environment, I think is a reminder of that potential and possibility in that moment when it's not been you know, tempered or sort of, I guess, you know, there's genes as well. So that's kind of leaving that aside for a moment, but, you know, and some DNA maybe, but I really see that almost like the human spirit or nature has been appropriated as nature has been itself, you know, that drive that humans seem to have for rationality and outcomes and certainty, and that things need to be expected and then we're okay, you know, that in that, you know, the very sort of natural course of anything is actually appropriated, that, you know, it's sort of taken to some end that's already, you know, it's like that, bureaucratic, the processes, the, you know, like the McDonald's burger, you know, there's the bun, there's, I don't know what's next because I don't really have them, but it's always got to be in order. You know, it's got to be that way. And that, you know, that will be the outcome, and that everything that we do, you know, has this outcome, and then we're comfortable. I think that's fear, you know, the fear in that is that fear of uncertainty, the fear of the unknown, that I think, you know, I even see, you know, lots of, you know, theology has kind of also, in some respects, appropriated that mystery, you know, that wonder maybe by sort of, you know, putting a direction to it. You have to do this, you have to do these steps to get to, you know, something.
And also
something that's somehow better than what's here. Yeah, rules. And, you know, and that it's somehow it's, you know, it's better than what's just here, because this isn't okay, or this isn't, you know, this sort of natural state, or this just potential for whatever is not okay. It needs to be that. I really, with that conversation, I kind of went to appropriation. That was the word that came to me then.
There's also some statistic about how many times a child hears the word no in their early life. It's always no, 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 you can't do this, you can't do that. And, you know, almost as we grow up, we start to tell ourselves no. No, I can't be psychic. I can't be telepathic. I can't do this. And everyone's like always saying no, but if you just allow that, you know, what if you could?
You know? And it's really limiting too, you know, and that's that, you know, those limiting belief systems that just, we wind up somewhere with just these tight little kind of, you know, paths of repeat. And, you know, I guess for all of us here too, the work that we do to sort of bust those open and, you know, allow something else to creep out rather than that, you know, circle, that limiting cycle.
Getting into that sort of space of potential and allowing it to grow feels far harder as an adult. You know, having lived through some difficult times, it feels like, well, this is really, could be quite difficult to actually do something outside of the ordinary, to do something like that. Even though internally you might feel the potential, it's almost like society is part of that ceiling that we feel.
I think also that evolution is always relied on the idea of the survival of the fittest. And before we had our neocortex and we were the same as the rest of nature and didn't have a mental brain, our survival of the fittest was based on who could outrun, who was the strongest, et cetera, et cetera. And then when we developed our rational thinking capacity, which differentiated us from everybody else, it became the survival of the mentally fittest. And if you are a particularly smart person to survive everybody else, it would make sense to have others feel somehow mentally insecure. And that's really where the easiest way to do that is through fear and through disbelief and or lack of self-belief. And I don't know whether it was done intentionally or if it's just the normal evolution of human beings, but that part of that is that the fittest is the person who has the highest self-belief, because you're mentally then fitter than everybody else, because our society is really based around mental fitness more so than spiritual fitness, emotional fitness, heart fitness.
Thanks, Alex. That is amazing. Having grown up in a society being extremely dyslexic and against the education system as I grew up, and continually I surrounded myself by very bright people continually and very beautiful people. It was by nature that I could keep up with them, but unfortunately in the school system, I couldn't write a sentence. I couldn't express myself in writing. And as a result, I never forget, I got to, I don't know what you call it now, grade 8 or standard 6, whatever that is. I was about 13 years old. And I remember I was put in the class with all the retrobrates who had failed the year before, and yet all my friends were, you know, we'd all been prefects of primary school, but because my marks weren't right, I was put in this class. And I remember going to the debating society and them saying, no, you're not in the right class to be part of the debating society. And I mean, that for me was just like, whoa. And I remember it was the downward spiral which got my parents to change schools and whatever. But that is what the society did to, you know, and until such time as I left school and realized actually there's a world out there and I understand people much better than anybody else does. So I was able to go into hospitality. I could read customers, I could read staff, and I used that skill. And actually today, writing sentences, and if I have to get somebody to copyright read something, I get it. And you know, if it's important, but I've managed to get around it. And I can tell you to this day that I'm so grateful for that skill because I can think out of the box of anything. When the spell check goes, can't find the word, I can think of another word like that. I can think of a different thing. And it's given me so many skills today that I really have made me successful in so many ways. And it hasn't been about how I read and write. It's much more than that. And I encourage anyone, you know, if we took people who were talented at growing vegetables and that's what they really loved and that's what they wanted to do, and why make them go through an information education system where they could be expressing themselves, they could be building, they could be creative. And I mean, I really believe at this time that our education system of information now is going to start crashing. Homeschooling, we've spoken about it before. But I just think that it's so important that people realize that if society's potential doesn't meet theirs, don't fear it. Just use your strengths, use your things, because you will rise above that and end up reflecting back to society.
Cindy, that's such a beautiful connection to your own education. I'm reminded of my youngest grandchild before he went to grade one. And he had this amazing teacher who really got him. And he still is this little boy. He arrived very grounded, wanting to be on this planet, very energized. And when they would break, before they'd have their break to go and eat their lunch or something, he would not come back immediately. And, you know, the structure, you've got to be back. And where would she find him? He would be with the man doing the tending the garden in the school. And he would be having such moments of delight in discovering the insects and planting and tending the garden. And she would then say that she would always leave him a little while longer and say to him, you know, you do have to come back. I'll give you a few more minutes. And it was such a gift to him about how he could explore being out there. And sadly, then you move into the education system where you have to sit and you have to structure and you have to be. And it is amazing to see how even now in, you know, living overseas in the schooling there, and there's a whole structure, whatever he's got to do. But how often when you look for him and you say, where is he? And he's out down in the bottom of the garden, bringing leaves, bringing insects, bringing stuff into the house. And he can be left out there for hours. And I think that's such a beautiful connection this little being has to the earth energy, and yet only one teacher recognized that, and then he had to, you know, find his way into the school structure. And yeah, it saddens me a little bit because it's, but in the way he's brought up at home, there's a lot of permission given to him to be out there and explore. And I think as children, we weren't given the permission. We weren't allowed. We were just, it was, you know, you had to fit into the structure. And it's just, I mean, my middle grandchild is dyslexic and severely dyslexic. And then he has a brain for maths that leaves the rest of the class behind. But he's been given such amazing attention by a woman who really sees him. And I think that's part of what we need, is when we see beings and each other and their potential of where they're at, where we don't live in a world where things are not seen. We go behind and see what you know, not the masks that we've already had to create. And we just see where they're at. And that's when the possibility and the potential in all of us shows itself. And I think of myself, Cindy, I was told I'd never do maths or arithmetic in my day and hit on the knuckles. And, you know, then I ran a business for years and I was a shoe buyer and I had to tap into all sorts of things that I was told I couldn't do. But slowly but surely, I started to understand that there are certain things that are in my natural flow, but then there's certain things that I can actually do. And I might never be a mathematician, but I could work out certain things. And I think when we see people where they're at, and we spoke about that last week as healers, when we can meet our clients where they're at and sometimes walk backwards to walk forwards, I think with children and with each other, just noticing where someone's at, then we can see the possibility and the potential in them, which is so powerful in the way we are in the world.
There's a quote attributed to Albert Einstein. Everyone is a genius, but if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, you'll live your whole life thinking the fish is stupid.
Fantastic. That is beautiful, Val. And your grandson, it reminds me of myself, actually, almost at school when I didn't want to, you know, I could feel that force or that squish, you know, like get down, get into something here instead of, you know, kind of being expansive really, or, you know, the environment around me or whatever. But the one thing that gives me just a possibility of a potential for technology, I mean, technology has done some wonderful things for us, but I think there's parts of it as well that have really closed some ability down as well. Accessing, you know, I guess like with anything, if there's, you know, if it's overuse or etc. The one thing that I see and I wonder, and I was listening to a conversation the other day on a podcast that led me further into this thinking is, so if we're kind of going towards a technology that does everything for us, so it starts to think for us and does every single thing for us, so mechanically, you know, that over time and over decades and years, there must be a point, or is there a point where, you know, what sort of things do people do? You know, what do young people come along and say, well, what can I do? There's a robot or there's a technology that does everything for the human now. What then does that give the potential for the human to then do? If there's machines or there's technology that does everything, then really, you know, that sort of one day when we in the past hundreds of years ago or whatever, we thought, you know, we had a calling or there was something that we were there to do, or there was that sort of idea that again, it was quite religious part of it. And but really that potential that we just have as an individual with our inspiration and our desires and our dreams, or what moves us in our environment, can we then go to that when everything else is done for us? You know, sort of wondering what the future looks like and that possibility that we might somehow come back to our gifts or the things that are our potential.
I think that as the world moves more and more automated and there's less for us as humans to do, I think there's a wonderful opportunity in that. I think sometimes our need to earn money and have to have a job stops us from actually meeting our purpose. And now we'll probably find ourselves moving to a world where we'll have like universal basic incomes and everybody will just get paid a stipend for no work, and which means that we will have the space then to do what is our calling and our purpose. And I think that there can be beauty and opportunity in that. Hopefully that is how it works out. But yeah, that to me is the opportunity, and that is that I don't need to do something to earn a wage. I can do it because my heart tells me to do it.
Yeah, allows space for creativity. So if the necessities are taken care of, we can turn our attention towards the arts, which is about bringing joy into our lives. Mm-hmm. Or perhaps take our attention towards self-actualization and the pursuit of enlightenment, because we don't need to spend 40 hours a week putting food on the table. Jen?
I agree. I actually see, although, you know, young people, as always, get a lot of shtick, I guess you could say, for, you know, they're to blame, or, you know, they're sort of, as all young generations do, they kind of get the, you know, the heat for something that changes socially. But I sort of feel this bubble of excitement sometimes, really, that they're kind of onto it. You know, they're onto this. You know, and although, you know, there's a criticism, and particularly in Australia, you know, there's this sort of working class type of, you know, you've got to work hard, and you've got to work hard, and you save your money, and, you know, you've got to get an education, you've got to get married, you've got to get the mortgage, you know, this whole sort of that design, and that rational, that outcome, because then you'll be a happy person, etc. Where I see young people going, I'm going to work part time, or I'm going to do, you know, a couple of jobs, or, and there's this sort of idea that they're, you know, they've had it too easy, or, you know, the character's, you know, not developed, etc., based on some old model. But I really see young people as actually having figured it out. You know, what's your superannuation and pension and, you know, mortgages, and, you know, that a lot of young people I speak to in my classes, they're kind of like, why would I put myself in that cage? You know, why would I do that? And that's that little spark of hope I have that young people will actually, you know, through being more aware too, they're more aware of their environment, they're more aware of politics, they're much more civilly minded, I feel, than, you know, than when I grew up and when I was younger. You know, they have a social conscience more developed than I think we do. So I think they, you know, if they can kind of get there, that's a real possibility for the future of just what makes us alive and happy and makes our hearts feel good, rather than, you know, what this society tells us we must do to achieve whatever that is, that often is not achievable.
Yeah, let's follow the joy. Follow that which leaves us feeling inspired. And staying in that place is actually part of what we started the conversation with, was about being in the state of miracle-mindedness. Because how are you going to be in a state of miracle-mindedness when you're up to your eyeballs in spreadsheets and debt payments and all other things that, like, leave you feeling dead inside? You know. And I know, because this was my journey. I was like stuck in a career that just drained the life out of me. And it felt like it. And only when I could break out of it could I really start to feel alive and inspired and getting into that state of miracle-mindedness.
And I think, Mark, what's interesting around that, I was looking at, I have a number of businesses, and I was looking at the challenges I used to have when I was younger in business and the challenges I don't have now, that actually the businesses that I have now are with people that I like dealing with, you might talk about spreadsheets. I love spreadsheets. I get great excitement out of doing spreadsheets. But what I was saying, the joy that I actually get, and what happens when I hit a bump and I get to a place where somebody is uncomfortable for me, within that, the potential is that they're reflecting something at me that either I need to move on or let go of that and change it. And how over the years my wisdom has grown to be able to acknowledge that when those situations are becoming uncomfortable and when I've got that playing in my head, it's like, okay, so what do I need to change in order, you know, it's that we back to the personal responsibility of when you're doing something that you're not enjoying, then you need to look at what that is. And I actually looked around and went, okay, so I've got one issue here, but I'm dealing with that. But actually, the rest of it, I really enjoy what I do, whether it be, you know, in my franchising business or whether it be the Moyo platform or the school or whatever those things are. They're bringing me joy. And I guess that's growing up and learning that and having, you know, doing the work all the time to surround myself by things that I do every day that are, that bring me joy. And you know, if I could say anything to young people, is that that's what they need to keep looking for. And if it's not, then they need to change and shift and move on. Not everything needs to be for life. You don't start a job and work in it for 40 years anymore. You know, and I would encourage people that not one job fits all. You know, try three or four different things that you enjoy doing. Have multiple incomes, you know, because that today is, you know, you can fulfill a number of needs rather than having, you know, if you have a boss that isn't making you happy, then look at yourself as to what it is and then move on. And I don't know why I've gone into this conversation, but something somebody said is like, we have the ability to change that within the system today in order to create people being more in alignment with what they should be doing. A means to an end needs to go.
It actually makes a lot of sense to actually have multiple streams of income in this day and age, and to, you know, this gig economy where you can do like projects at a time or have different businesses that sort of can coexist together. It makes a lot of sense if you can get to that. I suppose it's not for everybody.
I just am reminded of a story when we talk about the structure and the way of doing things and then finding a new way to do something. I don't recall who shared this with me, but they took an apple and they sliced it in one way. So in the way that I would normally slice it. So when you cut it and then you can see the length of the core. And then they turned the apple and they sliced it the other way. When you hold it up, it looks like there's a flower inside. And the potential in all of us is to flower and blossom. And if we just change the way we do a few things, then there is that potential and we don't have to stick to that structure of that it only has to be done this way. And that's what I like what Cindy's saying, that when the wisdom comes, you find another way to slice that apple. And then we can work from a place of joy. And when you work from that place of joy, then you flower and blossom and those around you benefit from that. But I love that story of the apple because it just shifts the way we think about the mental conditioning to do things in one way when there are many ways. And I love what Jen said about the young people are, you know, we drive a hard bargain on them. They sow this and they sow that, but they found a way of being in the world that often brings them lots of joy, delight, and a way of bringing in income, which is not the way we were trained to do it, which is very beautiful to see.
Okay, guys. Yeah, Jen, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that apple, I've really been left with a visual. I'm gonna go and cut an apple just to, yeah, I almost wanted to run out and grab one. And yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. That's really left me with something great.
Yeah, I think we're all gonna go and get an apple now.
Yeah.
So thank you, Val. And to everybody for being here today. Thank you for sharing your thoughts, insights, and wisdom. Thank you for being part of the conversation from the heart. And we hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode of our podcast. We'll see you all next week.